Hello and welcome to Circling the Cup, San Jose Sharks podcast, episode number 84. I don't think we're going to have a lot to talk about this week because nothing happened this week, everybody. Nothing happened. Literally. I'm Alex. Here with me, as always, is the Honorable Ben. Ben, how are you doing?
I think we wish nothing happened.
Exactly. And also here with us, Colin. Colin, how cold is it where you are? Is it colder than the ice in San Jose?
No, but it's probably a bit warmer than Thornton's rehab room.
Oh, wow. You could have got a lot of ways with that. So let's get the jumbo gorilla out in the open here. For those of you who have been living under a rock and somehow missed all the coverage this week, Jumbo Joe Thornton has sustained a new knee injury. He had arthroscopic surgery. The timetable for him to come back is, I don't know, definitely a couple of weeks at least. It's not the most encouraging thing because it was to his air quotes good knee, and he was still kind of rehabbing the other knee. And there's one thing I really want to bring up, but we're going to talk about this from a lot of different angles, obviously, because we have to. But I'm going to go on a monologue where I basically, for Ben's sake, told you so. Yes.
Can I just say for a second, did everybody notice which player took Jumbo out?
Yes.
It was Michael Badker.
Yeah.
Womp, womp.
I don't know about you, but I was playing NHL 18 today, and Badker scored my game-winning goal. It's prophecy, I suppose. Something that we talked about in the offseason that I don't really think is going to be brought up a lot about this Thornton injury, but I think is pretty interesting as someone who's obsessed with contracts and the like, is in last year's offseason, this past offseason, he was an unrestricted free agent. He had one of three options, and we talked about this in the preseason podcast. Those options were, one, he doesn't re-sign with the Sharks and he chases a cup somewhere else. Two, he signs what we would have assumed would be a lower than he was making before multi-year contract, which on the positive side would allow him to finish his career when he was ready to finish his career versus being forced to. But on the maybe negative side, if the Sharks were actually doing their rebuild or if this year didn't work out, would kind of prevent him from winning a cup. Or option number three, which is the option that he elected to take, which was sign a very lucrative one-year contract with the Sharks. If the Sharks are good and he wins the cup, yay! If not, he gets a lot of money and he becomes a free agent and chases it somewhere else. But, Ben, you correctly listed that was contingent on working out on one of or of neither of these two negatives occurring. One was his game falling off a cliff because of his age. And two was health. Right? Injury risk. And that is kind of what has come around. Right. Now, the reason I point this out, is not to be a Debbie Downer at all. But I think, you know, in my experience talking with a lot of people who at least casually watch hockey and even some people who watch it seriously, a lot of times they don't really understand like the level of thought sometimes that goes into contracts. They maybe do from the GM side, right? Like they get, okay, you're not just trying to address now. You've got to be conscious of where your salary is going to be in a couple of years, where the cap's going to be, what your holes are going to be. You don't want to be like Chicago and wrap everything up in four players and not be able to afford a supporting cast. But also on the player side, right, there's a lot of things to consider, like money, obviously, security and comfort for your family if you've got a family. Loyalty, I suppose, is in there somewhere for some people. Whether or not you want to win a cup. What role you want to play. For example, Marlowe sort of took the opposite of what I would say Thornton took, which was Marlowe really wanted to play at least three more years. And that's what he's going to be able to do. And the Sharks weren't necessarily offering him that. So you have to think that this injury is going to put a little bit of a wrinkle in Jumbo's free agency next year.
Yeah.
Ben, I mean, since you were the one that brought this up, and I know, again, no one's really talking about this, do you have any thoughts on it before we actually talk about the rest of the horrors of the injury?
Yeah, I think what I would say is, all right, so Jumbo's season has been kind of an interesting one, given all the context of the fact that he took, you know, an above market contract to stay with the Sharks. I felt like he kind of got off to a good start in terms of the way he looked on the ice and not a great start in terms of, you know, the point accumulation.
Right.
And and had come on pretty strong in the last month. Like most of the Sharks have, actually. If you look at the beginning of this calendar year, the Sharks are actually number one in offense since the beginning of 2018. And some of that has been, I think, first of all, Jumbo kind of getting, getting his conditioning back, right?
Actually shooting.
And also shooting, which he's been doing a little bit more than we're used to since probably about 4 or 5 years ago. And so in that sense, what has happened to him here is a real tragedy, because I felt like he was finally firing on all cylinders, right? He was literally shooting, his passing, stamina, conditioning, whatever you want to call his ability to stay in the play. And I said last week that, as that guy, when he's back checking, moves as fast as any guy in the league, just because he just puts everything into it. So this sucks on that level, because whatever the injury is, and however much time it takes him to rehab, we know a couple things about Jumbo, particularly since he played on a busted MCL last year in the playoffs. One, he's going to try to get back on the ice faster than he should.
Yep.
Two, because of that, he's going to come back out of shape. And so when he plays, he's not going to be at 100%. And three, if the injury is, the guys who know better how these images or injuries take to rehab posted some timelines on Twitter the other day. And, like a low grade sprain should take a couple weeks to heal. Something that's more like a moderate sprain, 4 weeks. If it's worst case scenario, we're talking at least 6, just to get kind of back on the ice. Right?
Can I throw one additional thing there too? Most of the time, sure. When you're getting those numbers assuming that the other knee is fine.
Totally, and also that there's no setbacks.
Right.
Right. And a guy Jumbo's age, there's no guarantee that as he rehabs, there aren't going to be setbacks. I mean, just look at what's happened to poor Paul Martin this year.
Right.
Right. And the Sharks have made the right decision to cut bait on that guy and send him down to the AHL. But part of it is old dudes have trouble getting back into game shape. And also, the older you are, the less likely you are to heal perfectly. Right. So as a Sharks fan, I'd love to see Jumbo come back, not rush himself. And maybe by the start of the playoffs, we'll be seeing him at 100%. But it's probably only if we're talking about not the worst case scenario. And the team's not really saying, the team's not going to say how severe the injury really was. They did admit pretty openly that he had arthroscopic surgery, which could mean a bunch of different things.
Right.
At the bare minimum, it means they did some repair on the ligament. Probably. Right?
Right.
So, as a Sharks fan, this is just different. Because this was a team that started to look like it, was second in the Pacific with Jumbo. The team is better with Jumbo on the ice than with him not. It is a wake-up call to the younger guys that they're going to have to step up. And it's also a wake-up call to DeBoer that he's going to have to do more than just rely on Jumbo to drag the team into the playoffs.
Right.
There's a question in chat whether the Sharks are the oldest team on average. Actually, they're not, and they're not by a pretty wide margin, because they have a number of guys who are on entry-level contracts. They've got some guys weighing down the low end, despite the fact that they've got some guys drawing up the average. Part of that is because Martin hasn't been on the roster most of the year, too, because he dragged it up.
Right.
And Marlowe left, right? So I guess the too long didn't read version of that is we can't really predict what timing Jumbo is going to come back, how healthy he's going to be when he comes back, because we know he will try to force himself back into the ice before most people
let me just throw one devil's advocate to that out there. And I'm only throwing it out there because it is something that might be a consideration. And that is, again, he signed a 1-year deal. So he if he wants to continue playing, regardless of what happens, right? Whether he comes back, doesn't come back, comes back early, comes back strong, comes back weak. Yeah. Any team that's looking to resign him, he'll be 38, 39. There may need to be, they're going to want to evaluate him, right? And so if you're Jumbo, yes, you want to get back on the ice immediately and help your team, as seems to be his nature. At the same time, it's not like it was before, and you kind of got to consider what you want to continue doing, especially again because his other knee, you know, we as far as we've been told, you know, still as good as he looks, still wasn't necessarily 100%. And the last thing you want to do is rush back and either re-injure the other knee or, you know, I don't know, overcompensate or what, because then you're going to hit that off season. And if he's not good, that could spell, you know, the end, or at least the end of whatever his goal might be. So, you know, that might be a consideration in the back of his head. I think he still obviously always puts team first.
Yeah. I don't think Jumbo, despite the fact that, you know, I think he played his leverage to maximum effect to get the $8 million contract this year when Marleau re-signed.
Yeah.
I don't see Jumbo as a selfish guy who's just trying to get what's his for next year.
No. Right? But it's not even about what's his, because it's not necessarily about the money, sure, right?
But if he rushes back, right, it's not going to be because he's playing for a contract next year. I think we know that if Jumbo rushes himself back, it's because he feels like this team needs him.
Right.
And this is his last shot for a cup.
Well, unless he goes somewhere next year where he's got an option for a cup.
Right.
Right.
Sure.
And that's the thing, is that if he causes serious or permanent damage, that also is thrown in jeopardy.
Interesting thing about that, though, right? All we have to do is look at Marleau and the sort of funk that the Toronto team is in, to see that that's no guarantee that you go to a young team looking for leadership and suddenly that takes them over the edge.
Oh, of course not.
Right?
Of course not.
Which that might help us in the long run. The fact that Marleau has gone there and played pretty well, but the team itself has taken a step back, that may play in the Sharks' favor at the end of the year.
Well, let me ask you guys the inevitable question, right? And that is, if you are, let's not look at it from Thornton's perspective at this point anymore, because I think we've covered that. If you're Doug Wilson, who was formerly looking for a fourth line center, and dare I say it, may have seen the future to realize that that might be something he ends up needing when he shuffles someone else to take Jumbo's place. If you're Doug Wilson, how does this change your plan, or does it at all?
I don't think it changes the plan. It dramatically accelerates it. Mm-hmm. I mean, here's the upside for me as a Sharks fan. Wilson has to do something. And
see, I don't know.
So if he does nothing, then the idea that this is sort of a walking rebuild, it loses some weight for me, because it means that your walking rebuild is predicated or based entirely on Thornton being around to like win some games while you're trying to figure out what you're doing. And that's not really a plan. That's just waiting to form a plan.
So here's where I disagree with that, just a little bit. And that is that if I personally am Doug Wilson, I was already starting to figure out what the replacement for Jumbo was going to be, likely in the offseason, right? And if that's something that I can acquire at the trade deadline, which, you know, I think we've all discussed, we don't really have the right chips to give up necessarily to do that, then that's one thing. If it's a UFA thing, that's another thing. Doug Wilson can technically try and ride this out until Jumbo's back. If as long as the team is competitive enough to keep a playoff spot, you know, or stay in contention, he doesn't necessarily have to do a move now for now's sake. And I think that's what I'm really interested in finding out. Does this accelerate anything for him? Is there anything to even accelerate regarding what's out there and what he's willing to give up? Or is this sort of like, you know, we don't know what his intent was, right? Whether his intent was to try and re-sign Jumbo at the end of the season anyway, right? So obviously if the entire team starts collapsing, then yeah, something probably needs to be done. But we don't necessarily know if that's going to be the case.
So to speak to Colin's point there, I kind of agree that this does maybe put more pressure on Doug to potentially try to solve the alleged problem that the Sharks have, which
fourth line center, yeah. Got it.
No, the real problem, right? Yes. Which is a shooting
lack of wingers. Yeah.
Right. On that same token, though, with what we've seen from the young guys over the last month, I'm not so sure that's actually a key problem anymore for the team, right? They where the Sharks are right now, they've scored more goals this year. This was something that was said during the broadcast after this point than they did with Marleau last year. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not because a single guy has replaced Marleau in any way, shape, or form. It's because Tierney and Meyer and LeBanc have all made some progress, right? Right. So I still do personally think that probably a scoring wing is a need for the team. And maybe this puts a fire under, you know, Wilson to go get something. But I guess where I differ from Colin on this a little bit is there's a risk also that the Jumbo injury leads to Doug making a bad trade.
Yes.
Yes.
Right?
That, yes. And that's sort of the downside of being a Sharks fan right now is we don't know which Wilson we have. If we have crazy like a Fox Wilson, or if we have crazy Wilson. And as you guys have sort of heard me say before, I think we have crazy Wilson right now.
Yeah, I see. I kind of go back and forth in my head. I granted this injury is pretty new. Like a part of me, I definitely agree with you, Ben. In fact, I think that maybe some attention needs to go obviously towards the defensive side of the game. As well for some adjustment, and we'll get to that a little bit later on the podcast. But I think the thing that kind of interests me, and I don't hear this brought up a lot because all the focus kind of is immediately on Thornton, and justifiably so.
Yeah,
is, you know, as I've said multiple times this season, I never really like if I'm Doug Wilson again, I've already been looking at what is the next phase of that, and this may or may not necessarily impact that timeline. Yes, the Pacific is really close right now. What we did see post Joe Thornton injury for the one game so far is that scoring didn't really seem like it was all that big of a problem, at least not in that game. And obviously that's just a one game sample. But yeah, I don't know. There's so many people. It's just so interesting to, you know, because when he goes down, the first thing you're thinking is, oh crap, how are we replacing Jumbo? But I think that was probably already on Doug Wilson's mind to a degree. Now the question is,
well,
does he have to do something now about it, or can he float, or is he willing to float at least to the deadline, address whatever other issues there are, see what happens when he comes back, and then really take care of it in the offseason?
Yeah. The challenge, I think, from outside the organization, or looking at this problem from outside the organization, is we just simply don't know the extent of Jumbo's injury.
Right.
Right. Obviously the team does. And so without us being able to know the timing that Jumbo is going to be able to come back, the timing that the team can thus expect Jumbo to be at full strength, and how close that is to the beginning of the playoffs, we can't even begin to approach whether a trade deadline solution is going to be short-term or long-term, right? I mean, because everybody's clamoring for John Tavares' fourth-line center, but that's...
You heard it here first from Ben. We're getting John Tavares as our fourth-line.
That's long-term, yeah. But not short-term. Right.
Well, so that's the thing, is do we even need to address short term? Is there any real reason to address short term? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either. Because again, like what is this year about? Is this team actually a Stanley Cup team? And as we've said all year, as currently constructed, barring big player developments out of LeBanc and Meyer, which, you know, I'll say Meyer certainly seems to be making those steps.
Yeah.
LeBanc hitting a crossbar on an open net makes me think that he hasn't. Right. Though he's certainly, you know, the part that LeBanc possibly can replace is the power play quarterback piece.
Right? Yeah.
But certainly not. And this is funny to say, the shooting, as we look again around the league, the question is, what do the Sharks have to give up, and what can the Sharks achievably get with what they can give up? And now with Jones injured, it's less likely, I think, that Dell moves.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Right? So what do the Sharks really have?
Well, but you come back to the what's the goal of the season, and it's been this sort of, you know, teasing, you know, we could win, maybe. Tune in and see.
That's to sell Sharks 365 tickets. calling.
Yeah, and yeah, obviously, and it's just this. Hey, buddy, now your big power piece is gone. Am I still tuning in just in case? Because, you know, I think he has to. If he doesn't do anything, it's a clear indication that's like, no, there is no. We're gonna try and, you know, flip the coin for the cup every season. Oh, we're gonna try to rebuild while we're doing it. It's like, no. We're trying to do like a 5-year rebuild here. Just be calm and wait, because if you do nothing, we're in a rebuild and it's a legitimate one, not this weird wave of hand, sleight of hand rebuild. And if he does do something, if we go and we chase some scoring winger or Tavares or something crazy. Well, Tavares isn't crazy, but there's crazy versions of Tavares out there. They're pushing for a cup and we're going to sort of throw things out to try to get that piece, which is kind of the 2007 to 2009 period, I think, where we were just, you know, trying to find somebody to tip the team over.
Yeah.
I'd prefer to be in a rebuild. I'd prefer that they didn't do anything. I'd prefer we just sort of sit with our cap money and, you know, make a wise choice somewhere after the season.
Yeah, see, I'm not quite in the same position, but I do agree with the sentiment that I like a lot of the potential that we have on the team now, and I'm very interested to see how they step up, and that's what the season has really been about, and I can't think of a better time for them to do it than literally right now. But, you know, a combination of your points, right? To Ben's point, we're not really in a position to give much up. And if we're going to be retooling on the fly, which I think we can all agree is exactly what Doug Wilson is going to try and do, mm-hmm. and he's been trying to do it, and that's fine. That's his strategy. I think the wrong thing is to try to do anything that addresses short term. I don't think they should be doing anything that's looking short term whatsoever. I think it has to be medium to long term. Like whatever you're picking up. Like if you're picking up a rental player, that is the biggest waste in my mind. Just to cover an injury, or, you know, even make a push for cup run. Because again, Ben, I think we've all been aligned all season with the point that you made, which is, that's not really what this year is.
Right.
And to try to give up anything of value to try and force that is kind of illogical.
Well, so I think with a caveat, I think there are a few wingers out there that would be worth adding to the team to push some guys who kind of shouldn't be playing onto the bench.
Yes, but that's not a short. That's different from a short term.
No, I think it is. Well, but it is still kind of a short term, you know, upgrade, right? And you know, I think specifically of a guy who hit the kind of the rumor mill today. I think specifically of a guy like Michael Grabner.
Yep.
Right. He's on a 1-year contract. He may or may not re-sign here if the Sharks were to trade him, and he might not be worth what the Rangers will ask for him, right? But I think that there are guys like that out there that teams that are giving up on the year are going to be willing to part with that could solve a couple problems, right? First, you know, keep the Sharks kind of heads above water while Jumbo rehabs. And second, potentially when Jumbo comes back, if he's healthy, you know, again, create a stronger forward core than they have at the moment. Granted that there are players that probably could fit these roles within the organization that are not going to get a chance because they just don't fit DeBoer's.
Who would you be talking about, Ben?
I think I already said his name. Oh, you mean who won't doesn't fit DeBoer's needs or preferences? Well, there, yeah. I'm talking about Daniel O'Regan, of course, who should be up right now.
Yep. I mean, right. He hasn't really had a bad look this season, right? Every time Oregon's been up, he's had some level of success.
Well, you can easily argue that any of the failings that either fans or the coaching staff perceives is simply the people that he's being paired up with in the situation he's being thrown into.
The thing is Oregon's performance has been a mixed bag. He scored points, but he's gotten caved in possession wise. But they also have put him with shit players.
Yeah. And he's young.
So the opportunity here, if the Sharks wanted to do it, would be to bring O'Regan right up and put him in, let's say, the second line as a center.
Yep.
Actually distribute the puck to talented guys. But they're not going to do it. So whatever, right? That said, again, it's like forward, and maybe this is a transition for you, Alex. Forward scoring has not been the problem over the last month.
Right.
Or even last week.
Yes. That's not actually the transition I'm going to go with, Ben.
Damn it.
I had another one cooked up. We got to get to some hockey games. That's my transition, Ben.
How do you like that?
Blunt and to the point. I hope you guys like hearing the term back to back, because that's how this week starts, as it feels like it's always going to be every week somehow. The first game, Sharks take on the Penguins, also known as the team that I used to root for before the Sharks were in existence, also known as the team that I really kind of don't really care about until they kind of became like my ex-girlfriend, where I just can't look them in the eye thanks to them scarring me with the Stanley Cup. I know it's a lot of information. Sorry, guys. Sharks win this game.
I was at that game, so I don't want to hear it.
Sharks, yeah, win this game 2-1 with goals from, I believe you already mentioned his name once, Timo Meier. And by the way, Colin, I don't know, I forgot to assign you the official position of doing the Meier count. Each time says Meier, you got to write it down.
He's going to get those 20 goals I said he'd get at the beginning of the season. I'm so happy to not be wrong.
And another goal from Tomas Hertl.
He's had a great week.
In the third, yes, absolutely great week. And hey, the Sharks win this. This possession thing went back and forth and back and forth. You know who looked really good?
Arendelle. You don't
Once
say.
Again. What were you going to say, Ben?
I said you don't say.
Yes. Truth. This was encouraging. I mean, obviously right now, I think at that point in time, I think we had the same amount of points as Pittsburgh. We're kind of
Pittsburgh's had an up and down year, a lot of injuries. They have not been great. Though they did come into San Jose on something of a strong streak.
Yeah.
A point streak have been playing good hockey. And this was of all the games the Sharks have played this year, this might have been one of the best games they played, and also may have been one of the most entertaining games.
Yeah.
No, the Sharks have played well against the Kings, but the Kings kind of suck.
Most entertaining.
I'm talking about against a good team.
That's a bold claim, because there have been some pretty entertaining games. Including this week, depending on
It depends on what you mean by entertaining, right? The Sharks have played some high scoring games, but some of those have not been that entertaining. In the sense that you can see the tragedy coming.
You hyperventilating is entertaining for me, Ben. So I'm going to go ahead and say they're entertaining. Any thoughts on this game?
I mean, I
do you even remember this game at this point this week?
Yeah, totally. It was a really, really good game, and it was fun to watch and close. And
definitely close.
I think both teams seem to be firing on all cylinders this game, and I was really happy to see the Sharks actually come out on the winning side.
I know what you're thinking, fans. You're thinking, didn't Burns get 2 assists, and is he maybe going to get a star this week? I can say no with certainty. No, bad fan.
He might.
Colin, what were you going to say?
I like playing the Penguins because, I mean, yeah, they've left their marks on us. But they're also a measuring stick team. If you can go out and they're having a bad season or a bad run right now, sure. But they're still a really good, quick, efficient team. And anytime we get to beat them, and we beat them, legitimately, not because, a puck hit a stanchion and went in or something. Good times. I'll take it. And it's the thing that really does not help my clarity on where the team is right now, because we see games like this. It's like, okay, maybe good things are going to happen. And then we see other games this season and you're just like, no, they're not.
Well, it wasn't just this game, this weekend, this game plus the next one that we'll talk about. The Sharks looked as good in a 2-game stretch as they have all year.
Yes, before we get to that game, I think we need to have a moment of silence and hilarity for the Edmonton Oilers. Ha 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 ha! All right.
Wait. What'd I miss?
Oh, they're just so...
Oh,
so
they're imploding. It's the best right now.
Yeah. But I mean, it's McLeod, because this is his second or third season.
Can I say something about that?
It's the same situation.
McLellan
called it.
Is part of the problem, but there's a bigger problem in Edmonton.
Everything.
No. You know what the problem is, right?
It's their GM.
Mm-hmm. Their GM did literally nothing to help this team. In fact, the attempts he made to help Edmonton actively undermined. They're going to waste the entry-level contract of the best player in the league. And I don't think we laughed hard enough about that. They've traded in the last two years.
Paul is going to be crying.
Taylor Hall for nothing.
He's doing really, really well.
Yeah. And Jordan Eberle, who's fifth in the league in points, something like that.
Yep.
For nothing. Yep. For nothing.
Makes you wonder why we couldn't get those players for nothing, Ben.
I know, right? If we'd been willing to part with Justin Braun for Taylor Hall, think what the Sharks would be right now. God,
oh, I thought you were going to go straight up Dylan for Hall. Let's just do it.
No, they wanted a specific hand.
I don't care what they wanted. I'm telling you what I wanted to give. Ben, you already mentioned this. Way to steal my thunder. But there were two games in this back-to-back, and normally you think, well, I'm hoping for maybe, you know, I'm assuming we maybe split, hoping to split or at least get a point in both games. Guess what? Sharks did one better. They won this one 6-2 over the Ducks, despite being outshot by the Ducks. Goals from, all right, brace yourselves, Vlasic, LeBanc. Two goals from Ben's favorite player, Bodger. A jumbo goal. I just poured a little bit of my beer on the curb for that one. And a Carlson goal. This game, towards the end, this game was kind of nutty. Like, I kind of felt like the Sharks were holding on a bit. Another really good performance from Aaron Dell. And a good all-around team performance. And again, this is a back-to-back. Like, and with a travel day too, right? I mean, obviously it's just San Jose to Anaheim, but that's awesome. And these are much needed points, especially as we are trying to hold our second place position over what is a pretty tight race between us, Calgary, Los Angeles, and of course the Ducks, who we were beating. Thoughts on this game, guys?
So Ben, do you know what the sort of average shot quality for the Ducks were in this game was? Because the thing I'm curious about with this game is how much of the game sort of held up to the eye test to, like, was this sort of a, like, scrappy Ducks-Sharks game where they outshot us, but we were pushing most of them to the outside because the Ducks had a lot of, like, sort of nail-biter moments, but if that was like the three nail biter moments of the game and the rest of the shots were pushed to the outside, low percentage shots, then my perception of this game might be a little off. And I was curious.
I got to be honest with you. I think the key to this game was no one covers Mikhail Bodker, because why would you? And the performance coming out of him was, well, pretty good. Okay. And it was a really good all around team effort. I know it sounds really cliche, but you know, you've got Thornton scoring a power play goal, you've got Bodker coming out of the woodworks, you've got Carlson, who's had kind of a so-so and not so great season in my personal opinion. You had LeBanc score. I mean, these were goals. I mean, again, think about this for a second, right? You had a goal from Vlasic, right? not really the biggest scoring defenseman on the team, and that's fine. That's not what he's supposed to be doing. You had a goal from LeBanc, who has had plenty of opportunities, but you know, learning to put the puck in the net. Bodker, who we all agree is not a sniper. Joe Thornton, who is suddenly shooting the puck, and Carlson.
Well, he was suddenly shooting.
Well, was shooting the puck, but that's the thing, right? You're getting goals from all these guys that you're not really necessarily expecting to be the guys that are scoring goals for your team. And I think that was probably a bit of a factor in this game.
Well, yeah, it's the other team's score that I'm curious about, because our defense has not been what it was at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
And I'm curious if,
yeah, so,
you know, how good was Dell, I guess, yeah, is my question.
To answer your question, is Dell had to be super fucking good. Because okay, if you look at the scoring chances in this game, if you look at where the shots were that Anaheim was putting on net and the shot attempts they made, they should have won this game. They should have won this game 6-2.
Yeah.
So Dell stood tall, and the Sharks defense got a little lucky. But and I would argue that this is a game where the bounces just went the Sharks' way from start to finish. Pucks found the net that normally don't, which, you know, is what's happening when Michael Boger scores two goals.
For the fifth time, we mentioned that.
And as you know, as Alex mentioned, you know, Carlson also got himself a goal. Mark Edward Vlasic looked like a power forward on that shot he put past, I think it was John Gibson in this game, right?
Yep.
Before, yeah, that's right, they brought Ryan Miller in at the end. I totally forgot about that.
Yeah, who, by the way, has a sick, sick mask.
Yeah. So this is, if you looked at where, first of all, two things. If you looked at the overall volume of shots, it tilted towards the Ducks even before the Sharks put a couple goals in and were well ahead. And it also, you know, does tilt in their favor in terms of actual scoring chances, dangerous shots from inside that home plate zone. But you're going to win a few of these games every year because you get the bounces. So it's enjoyable, particularly because the Sharks were coming off, we're on a back-to-back, and the fact that the Sharks have to play so many damn back-to-backs is a goddamn travesty anyway. So I kind of just laugh my way out of this game. So, lol, schedule maker, you assholes.
Yep.
6-2, bitches. Kind of how I feel about it.
But it's 6-2 on the shoulders of a tremendous goalie performance. And, like, yeah, it's a back-to-back. Yeah, like, we ran away after stealing the points that we're not statistically supposed to get.
Exactly. And also, by the way, part of that, they played Dell back-to-back, which you really should not do, even when your backup goalie is a guy who's having a bad year at the AHL level.
Especially if the second game is against the Ducks and a team that is going to bully your goalie. Oh. But the reason the shot quality and Dell's performance really is important to me is, you know, we had a really good defensive score in this game, not because we had a good defense. And I'm getting kind of worried. I described to a friend last week that we've gone from a team that, you know, prevented anybody from scoring goals and just had a hard time scoring ourselves, to being the team that's scoring all the goals on both sides. So I kind of prefer the defensive side, as long as, you know, a couple guys woke up.
Ben, closing thought there, because it sounded like you took a gasp.
I think what I would build on with Colin's perspective is that, yeah, I mean, this may have been the game that foreshadowed that Burns was going to be having a couple of shit games coming up, and that the defense was going to struggle a little bit more, because, you know, giving up that many shots in high danger areas means that your defensemen are not doing what they're supposed to do necessarily. So in that vein, what we're going to see in the Jets game and the game after,
just take the transition, Ben.
It's maybe
take the damn transition.
Maybe what we should have seen in the outcome of of this game.
Yes, the Sharks do not win this one. They lose it 5-4. About what, 18 seconds into overtime, I think it was, if I recall correctly. And by the way, there's something funny about that, because the opening score was about 18 seconds in the first period. So there's a little bit of a theme going. Sharks lose this 5-4. They get goals from Joe Pavelski, Logan Couture, Chris Tierney, and Timo Meier. Hey, look, it's almost the opposite of last game, where the good guys are scoring. Or I shouldn't say good guys, but the guys you would expect to be scoring are scoring. And I don't think we need to mention it again, but I'm going to anyway. Jumbo gets hurt in this game. And that was the sad, sad, sad cost of this game. Now, one thing I do want to point out real quick is the Sharks go down 3-0, and I'm sure a lot of people probably in the first and probably turned off the game. And the Joe Pavelski right before the end of the period scores a goal, but you're still probably like, this is 3-1 and probably not going our way. But then Sharks battle back with those goals from Logan Couture and Chris Tierney. This became a game. And then Timo Meier scores, and it starts to feel like this could potentially tip in the Sharks' favor. It doesn't, and it gets worse.
Yeah. Obviously the Jets are really good this year. They probably finally are playing up to where folks expected them to be a couple years ago by now.
I think they're overcompensating for the city of Winnipeg.
Well, I think for one, that's funny since that's been such an issue with Sharks saying things about Winnipeg, but I think that finally they're getting goaltending for one thing. And also, you know, they've got a lot of young guys who are not wide-eyed youngsters anymore, and all kind of hitting their prime at the same time. So I actually, you know, I was one of those guys who was thinking real hard when it was 3-1 or 3-0 that maybe there'd be better things to do with my time. And was kind of shocked to see the Sharks claw back to a tie game, to be honest, against a team that is, I think, younger and a little bit faster and also better than the Sharks. But yeah. Meier's tying goal, you know, after the Sharks had given up the lead, was as good as you're going to see. And then, of course, the cost of that is that with, what, like 20 seconds left in the game, Bodker rolls into Jumbo and goodbye knee.
Yep. So
kind of erases those two goals he got the previous game, huh?
I think Bodker's entire performance on the team so far erases any goals he gets unless it's Stanley Cup winning. So I sent you guys a picture on our normal day-to-day chat of where my childhood best friend was sitting for this game.
Right behind the Winnipeg bench.
Yeah. So not only do I hate him for the seats, I'm a little grumpy because, you know, he's my friend who I know to be the guy who just injures himself. He's like Ryan Reynolds, where he just sort of walks across the street and like breaks a bone. And I just feel like his mojo was in that arena and just settled on.
Don't you put that on him? Don't you put that on him, Colin? Don't you put that on him?
He can handle it. He's a happy guy. So yeah, I was a bit. I had words for him this week, and. Yeah, I actually agree with Ben about just sort of the greater outcome of this game and playing against the Jets.
Yeah, any final thoughts on this game, Ben, before we get to what was probably the more interesting game once Jumbo went down? That's a no.
I'm trying to think about how to put this because the OOT was just depressing.
Yeah.
How terribly Pavelski was kind of out of position on that yeah. goal.
Wow. Okay. Maybe we should just step away while.
Yeah. Let's move on. Yeah, we're gonna move on. I think everything we have to say comes up in this next game. Anyway,
we're moving on to the first Sharks game. The Sharks have played without Marlowe and Thornton since I think it was 2004. That's significant, right. Because that is also potentially the future of the Sharks. So get used to it, people. This was a very big game for a couple of reasons. Obviously team demeanor, or at least fans demeanor, was pretty low. A huge opportunity for a lot of people to step up, and a really important opportunity. These are guys that are, you know, playing to prove that they're part of the new core, and for Doug Wilson, because he really needs them to be part of the new core. Sharks don't win this game. They lose it 6-5, and this is kind of a crazy game here. Rangers open up scoring. Of all the people to tie the game, Barclay Goodrow gets a goal, and then Logan Couture gets a goal, which, you know, you would expect. And then the Rangers score again to tie it, and then Logan Couture says, and scores a goal. And then guess who scores a goal for the Rangers?
McDonough,
who's done like nothing. And guess what he does next?
Does scores it again.
Another goal like a minute later.
Yeah. And then play that was basically thanks to a bad play by Timo too.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And then guess who scores for the Sharks? Vlasic. Oh, obviously Rangers scored again before that. And then JT Miller scores for the Rangers. And then Hurdle scores with a pulled goalie situation. And you're thinking, it's not really enough time to come back, but nice job, Hurdle. But your hopes kind of got up a little bit just because they had to. And it was pointless because the Sharks couldn't do anything. Here's what I will say about this game. This was probably I thought Dell's performance in this was pretty interesting because I didn't think it was necessarily strong. I think the defense was atrocious this game. Dell went from making amazing saves to a couple of like kind of feel like he should have had them, especially him being Dell. But again, man, this was the game where I looked at it and I was like, our defense is not playing well. Really not playing well. And there's a specific person. There's a specific person who I'm thinking of, Ben. Who would that be?
There is one goal out of six I put on Dell. And four of these goals put on Burns.
Mm-hmm.
Four.
This is something that I was afraid of when Thornton went down. And I've actually been afraid of it in general, but specifically that moment, I was concerned that everyone would try to overcompensate. Because the Sharks have, and I know this is like a totally stupid remark to make, but you know, if you listen to us, you know that the Sharks are regularly trying to do too much. And who of all people is at the highest risk in his position to try and do too much? And it's Brent Burns, right? And all of a sudden he wants to be hardcore power forward. And here's the deal. He's got to figure out. He's got to figure out what position he wants to play in and have a conversation with DeBoer and Wilson. Because here's the deal. You hear people around the league going, wow, you know, he's, I think like number two or number three in points for a defenseman. That's not what his job is to do. His job is to play defense. And if you're Burns and you are pinching too far or you're taking shots into players or you're putting yourself in a position where you are prioritizing your ability to maybe get a point over positioning or the defensive side of the game as a defenseman and as a defenseman making as much as you are and being so pivotal supposedly to the team, you can't do that. Like, you got to play defense first. That's one of the things that I really respect about Vlasic. And Vlasic was joking about it on his whatever behind the scenes thing, how, you know, he doesn't necessarily get mentioned a ton because he kind of just plays defense and he's a shutdown defenseman. And that's like Burns either needs to be a full. I'm starting to get to a point where I'm not saying you change it to forward. I'm saying he either needs to be one or the other because he can't seem to play both effectively.
No, there's something that does need to happen, which is that DeBoer needs to stop brushing off criticisms of Burns when he fucks up and hold him accountable for his bad play.
Yeah.
And this game was chock full of it. This game was chock full of Burns being out of position because he pinched at the wrong time and being out of position because he pinched at the wrong time and being out of position because he likes to go across the ice in the neutral zone at a guy who is covered by his D partner, leaving, of course, a guy on his side uncovered.
Yep.
And the thing that pisses me off about this is that DeBoer's solution to that is to put another shitty player with him rather than keep Joachim Ryan and talk to Burns about it. So he's like, I guess I'll have to put Dylan with him. Well, no, Dylan's not the problem. Ryan's not the problem. Dylan's not the problem. Burns is the problem.
Yep.
Stop pinching. You can't pinch right now. Until Jumbo comes back, you can't pinch. The simple rule. Burns, if you pinch, you're benched. Burns, stop going across the ice at a guy who's not yours. If you do that again, you're benched. Hold him accountable. That's the solution. The solution is not, you've got to put Dylan with him, because then you've got two defensive liabilities together, which means that, you know, 20 minutes a game, you're opening up your poor goalie to be shelled. It's stop pretending there's not a problem and deal with it. Coach, you stupid MF.
Well,
sorry. I'm pretty fired up about this.
Yeah, and I there's nothing Ben just said that I disagree with. I will add that maybe they think they dealt with it with the whole Martin experiment to like, oh, you know, Daddy Martin will teach Burns how to play defense. Okay, that's done. Martin, you go down to the basement. We got our Wookiees sorted. It's like, no, you really haven't. You know, you don't get to just, like, brush the Wookiee's hair and then say, okay, he's pretty, we're good now. You got to manage him every day.
Do you guys have any other thoughts other than the Burns meltdown on this game? I thought a lot of the players that we needed to step up, at least on the offensive side, looked pretty good.
I mean, I don't mean to say that from a defensive perspective that Burns was the only problem in this game.
No, that would be very naive.
Because there were goals, you know, scored while Vlasic and Braun were crossed up in this game. And maybe saying that Burns was responsible for like 5 of the 6 goals is wrong. It is wrong. He's probably responsible for 3 of the 6 goals, but that's a lot of fucking goals to be responsible for.
Yep. Yeah.
So, I mean, the team left Dell hung out to dry on 4 of the 6 goals. One of them was a screen that there was just nothing he could do. And you can't pick a particular, you know, defensive or offensive player to be responsible for that either. It was just one of those goals that's going to happen. That's McDonough's power play goal. And then there was the last goal, which probably Dell wants to have back. And you can't win games that way. If you've already given up 3 goals because one of your defensemen is a mindless Wookiee, you're generally not going to win those games. Right?
Yeah.
This is a league in which you need, you know, most of the time you're going to want to score 3, give up 2 to win. So the Sharks were lucky to have this game be 6-5 at the end of it.
Yeah. And yeah. I mean, the real tragic part is we've been that defensive team. We've had that piece sorted. And now it's sort of fallen apart as, you know, the coaching has tried to push the team towards scoring. And, you know, now they've got the scoring rolling, but they've just trashed the defense to get there.
Well, you know, and it's interesting you say that, Colin, because that's something we said about a month ago when the team was not yet out, you know, scoring, was that, you know, what is the real problem? Is it that the young guys can't shoot, or is it that the scheme depresses defense, right? Because it is so focused on preventing shots. And I think our takeaway as a group is that's what you get when you have DeBoer's system firing at all cylinders, is if the guys are really doing what they're supposed to do on the defensive side, it's a little bit harder to put the puck in the net on the other side.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it does feel like the team has compromised defense at the moment to maybe try to generate some offense, particularly if we're talking about Burns, who he's been on a tear for the last month. He has definitely been on the offensive side, you know, on fire. But when he's at his best, it's balanced.
Yep.
He's not making the bad pinches. He's not trying to do it all on defense.
Well,
doing it poorly, right? Coming across the ice at a guy who is already covered.
When Burns is at his most dangerous, in this season at least, he makes opportunities for other people because he does so much less on the offensive side. So he's just that constant threat.
No, a good example of that was in this game against the Jets too. You know, that he, you know, he came flying towards the blue line to keep that puck in and put it on net. It went off Pavlik and Goodrow to tuck it in. That's what we need Burns to do.
Yep.
And if he's doing that and not making bad pinches and not putting himself out of position on defense, this team is better for it.
Yeah, gents, agreed.
Gents, we got to move on to the 3 stars of the week. Ben, why don't you give us your 3 stars?
Son of a... Okay. I'm going to give the 3rd star to Jumbo for what he was contributing to the team and how much we will miss him now that he is Sir not appearing with a ligament for a while. I'm going to give the 2nd star to Michael Bodker.
Oh, damn you.
Wow.
Damn you.
I was going to say, anyone who gives it to Bodker or Burns is fired from the podcast.
Well, because Bodker actually, you know, up before he crippled Jumbo, he'd been playing quite a stretch of good hockey. And it actually, even in last night's game against the Jets, he played a good game. His shots coming together. He feels like he's got his confidence. And to be honest, if this team is going to do anything when Jumbo comes back, he's got to be scoring, which he's doing right now. Mm. First star is Logan Couture, who last night clearly did what he could to take the leadership of this team onto his shoulders. Had two of the better shots I feel like he's had this year. You know, there are a lot of guys I think who could have qualified for third star this week. Timo Meier, Tomas Hertl, they both played really well last night and have been playing well lately. So, you know, you could put them in if you want to take Jumbo out, but and these are the guys we need to see continue to step up to make progress if this team is going to tread water while Jumbo's out. So,
yep.
Colin.
Ben, you stole my fun. I was going to say bad care. You guys are going to be like, oh.
I mean, I feel like I should give him about 50 demerits for crippling Jumbo, but on the same token, like, I can't blame him for that collision. He got pushed into Jumbo. So.
Now the goalposts start sliding. Okay. You just ruined my morning. Saturday's ruined. No, you're not. Geez, third star. Now that my bad curse taken, I'm going to go. I'm going to go.
Give it to Vlasic. Two goals this week. Give it to Vlasic. Power forward, Mark Edward Vlasic.
You know, only because it's Ben, Mr. Vlasic can't shoot and needs to stop trying. Yes, okay. Vlasic gets a third star. And it's because he is shooting, he is playing offense, and he's remembering his roots and still
showing up.
No, he shouldn't. I agree with that. That part I agree with. Vlasic, keep trying to shoot, man. I support your efforts to add offense to your game. One day it'll happen. And then second star is going to go to Dell, actually, just because, you know, I'm glad they didn't trade you when you were first catching fire, buddy, because we kind of need that fire right now. And last star goes to Couture, because, yeah, he's stepping up.
And he's the boss now.
The thing that I love about it, though, is he hasn't lost that sort of dirt in your eye, like childish sort of exuberance and scrappiness to his play. Like he always has this like mischievous prankster attitude when he's really firing, when he's really on it. And I really like that he's sort of been able to mature and keep that sort of flair where, you know, he'll leave his feet at times when either making a hit or, you know, doing some sort of play, but it's not malicious. It's just he's sort of in the moment and really enjoying it. And, you know, it's good to see. And it's good to see it be not wrapped up in snarky criticisms of fan attendance.
My three stars are not going to go to the Sharks only because you guys have already taken all the good ones. And also because I feel like after the Joe Thornton injury, we need some levity. So my third star.
Uh-oh.
And I don't even know if you guys have been following this. My third star goes to the Oakview Group. That's the company behind the Seattle expansion bid, who registered 13 different names, 38 different domains, which kind of gives us a sneak peek on what they're thinking for their inevitable expansion or relocation of the Arizona Coyotes. Sadly, none of the names included the Metropolitans, which seems baffling to me, but the fact that they are making motion is good. Unfortunately, the Seals was one of the names. And I feel like, and the Whales too, which I feel like already NHL franchises can't do that. My second star of the week, and this I find hilarious, and I don't know if you guys knew this at all, but did you guys hear about the whole Golden Knights Jimmy World thing?
Yeah, I saw it happen on Twitter.
Great. Great. Colin, if you're not familiar, the Golden Knights who've had, you know, aggressive Twitter account wrote, "We used to like Jimmy Eat World songs, but meow, we realized the Panthers play it when they score. It would meow some sweetness not to hear it anymore." To which Jimmy Eat World responded, "Maybe just stop letting them score," which I thought was fantastic. And I think that's worth getting a star. And my first star goes to a player who, you know, basically, if you haven't seen this replay, you need to see it. Epitomize everything of what we've been thinking all season. And that would be Austin Matthews for his amazing reaction to the goal.
When he called his own goal?
Well, it's one of those things. No. The goal interference where he was just like
that.
That is one of those things that has plagued this league all year. If I could say two things that have plagued the league this year more than anything else, it has been the super annoying goal challenges that have gone on with the offsides, still annoying. And above that, on the totem pole, would be the fact that literally no one knows what interference is anymore. And we've talked about that before, but just the look on Austin Matthews' face was perfect. To see
it's like a catch in the NFL. Nobody really knows what it is today.
Oh, but it's even harder to tell than that. And his expression says it all from a player's perspective, which I think was absolutely amazing. Again, you should definitely look that up on NHL GIFs if you can.
Can I just say, I'm looking at the 13 names that the Seattle team has trademarked, and these are all garbage.
Well, Sockeye is their ultimate frisbee team, and I know no one pays attention to that.
I don't think there's one here that isn't garbage. Cougars, Eagles, Emeralds, Evergreens, Firebirds, Kraken, Rainiers, really? Renegades, Sea Lions, Seals, Sockeye.
I don't understand how you could do whales and seals, because that's, I mean, you can't do whales. That's
Whalers versus, Golden Seals. No, you can't do those, but they're all garbage.
Why would you not do the last name you had when you won a Stanley Cup? Like, why isn't that? And by the way, if you've never seen the Seattle Metropolitan's classic logo or sweater, it's rad. And in fact, I think Ebbets Field Flannels like sells replicas of them, and they're awesome. Should be a gimme for that team. But hey, my whole point was, Ben, Seattle's a great sports city, and I'm just happy that they're making moves. You know what I mean?
I like that you're just like, but that Stanley Cup was 1917, so.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, they weren't. I don't even think they were an NHL team, technically, right? It doesn't matter. It was still great.
It's like, during the Great War.
Hey, man, how many cups do we have? That's right, damn it, Ben. Maybe throw that argument out. The Sharks, as of right now, which is Friday, are second in the division behind the Golden Knights, who have pretty much more or less running away with it. The Sharks have 59 points. Directly behind them with 58 points is Calgary, and sniffing at their heels, really just a game behind, are Los Angeles and Anaheim. Now, the good news is that the Sharks still have they've only played 48 games. So of those teams behind them, Calgary and Los Angeles have played 49, and Anaheim and Edmonton have played 50. So holding on until we get Jumbo back or until we get into the playoffs. We've also got a bunch of games this week. Remember how I said back to back every week? Well, that's that's not literally every month, because we had that 5-game break, but otherwise, or every week, it would have been every week. The Sharks take on the Pittsburgh Penguins again in Pittsburgh, this time on the 30th. And then just because they're playing the Detroit Fire Sale Red Wings on the 31st, and they close out the week, or at least our week, on Friday against the Columbus Blue Jackets in Columbus. Now, if you enjoy this podcast, you already subscribed to it. If not, you can subscribe to it on Android
somewhere
things, platforms. I was stumbling on the word. Thank you, Ben. That Sapporo's starting to catch up. For Apple people, you got iTunes. You know where to go, or the podcast app. You can check out the podcast at work on our website, www.circlingthecup. Just know it's nothing to look at. You can follow us on Facebook at circlingthecup.com/Facebook, which would be amazing. Facebook.com/circlingthecup. Yes, and if you're seeing a double post on Twitter or something ridiculous, that's because it's coming from the Facebook side, because we're not as classy as Ben is on the Twitter, which you can follow at Circling the Cup. Gentlemen, another week in the books. Hopefully, this next week's going to be very interesting, not because of the All-Star game, but because, you know, the Sharks are we're really going to learn a lot about where this team actually is over the next couple of games. But beyond that, say goodbye, guys.
Goodbye, guys.
Bye. Bye-bye.